You are listening to the Rainmakers Power Hour. Join your hosts, Wendy Butler, Leanne Nguyen, and Macy Nelson, as they interview the most successful entrepreneurs from around the world who are sharing their proven strategies to help take your business to the next level.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the room. And we are here today on a special podcast with our special guest, John Najarian. And we're here on Chatter every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to talk about all things business, especially with the name with Rainmakers. What are you going to make us rain money today, John? We're going to talk about that. But we're here today and we're sponsored by Smarter Aircraft. And of course, our one and only William and Harry. I know if you guys ever play golf, you got to check out their golf line. I think, John, have you seen the golf line, John? We're going to talk about that later. But he's wearing a, was it the Masters hat? So represented there. But guys, if you don't have the app downloaded, it's the Chatter social app. It has the three little circles. And you can download it and on the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. So we'd love everyone, if you're just brand new to this podcast, definitely give us a share. Give us a follow on Apple and also Spotify. There are many, many previous podcast episodes, and there's many more lined up. Our calendar is completely booked, right?
Booked.
So we have like a waiting list of people that are about to come in and watch our show. But a big shout out to Chatter, Nelson and Pega, the founder of Chatter, to be able to give us a social audio app with video. So definitely tune in because you can see all the video action here. So I'm going to go ahead and hand this to Miss Wendy Butler, my co-host, and also Macy Nelson will be chiming in later with those hot, hot seat questions. Go ahead, Wendy.
So, yeah. So welcome to the show, John. We're so excited to have you here today. I'm looking over your incredible list of accomplishments. I mean, seriously, a linebacker with the Chicago Bears. Then you moved on from that to become a trader in the Chicago Exchange for 25 years. 1990, founded Mercury Trading, which you sold in 2004. 2005, co-founded the very popular Option Monster and Trade Monster, which you sold later for an incredible $750 million. You're definitely one of the most recognized faces in finance. We call you FinFluencer. You're a FinFluencer.
FinFluencer.
Term for it.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a co-host of the popular Rebel's Edge. Regular contributor to Fox Business News, Newsmax, Bloomberg, Sirius, XM Radio, for all those multiple channels you're doing finance reporting. And now you have founded a new company, Market Rebellion, with your brother, Pete. And, of course, Mark is your CEO, who we've talked to a couple of weeks ago. So much to talk about. Welcome to the show here today.
Wendy, it is indeed a pleasure. Credit and Macy, I'm delighted to be here with you, and thank you to the founder of Chatter for putting this whole thing together. So really looking forward to the conversation, ladies.
So, of course, I'm going to have to ask you the obvious question, like what happened between becoming an NFL player to getting into options trading? What happened with that transition? Did you find a mentor, or was it always something you were interested in?
Let's see. Because I was lucky enough to be in Chicago when I got cut, Wendy, I had the opportunity to stick around in Chicago. They always give you a round-trip ticket when you're a rookie, because most of us end up getting cut. I played four games as a rookie, got cut, and cashed in my ticket because I wanted to stay in Chicago. And one of the reasons was, of course, that Chicago had the biggest exchanges in the world. They had the Mercantile Exchange, the CME it's called as well, the Board of Trade, which is, of course, commodities. Both of those two are commodity-based. And then there's Chicago Board Option Exchange. Now it's called CBOE Global Markets. And the fact that there were thousands of traders down there on those floors, each of them probably had 2,000 traders. So collectively, there might have been 6,000 traders in Chicago, bigger than any other city anywhere in the world. And that's what really got me excited about staying here, Wendy, because to answer your question, the step that I took wasn't, you know, preordained. It wasn't natural. Most of us, when you get cut, you just look for another team to catch on with. And I decided that, well, the Bears probably knew my talent, if you want to call it that. I'm putting it in air quotes, my talent as much as anybody and as well as anybody. So if I didn't make their team and they weren't real good at the time, I probably was going to be better off in another vocation. And turns out I was. Turns out that trading, even though it came tough to me for the first 3 months, when you know, that moment happened, when I understood what was going on, and obviously Macy knows what I'm talking about, when you finally understand, Macy, how things are, you know, how options work, how people make and lose money in the markets, it really is black and white then. It's not shades of gray anymore. Now you see it for what it is. And as long as you keep your discipline, which my brother and I, as you know, because you've sat in on some of our classes, Wendy, and I think credit as well, when you hear somebody tell you that discipline is the most important thing, you might just let it go in one ear and out the other. That's a mistake, because discipline is the most important thing. If you can understand trading and then you cut your losses and let the winners run as best you can, you'll be in this game a long time. You can make a lot of money, and it's a lot of fun along the way as well.
Well, you obviously have done well for yourself. I mean, just your list of companies that you have created and sold, very impressive. Mm-hmm. You obviously know what you're doing, and you're the one that we need to be following. As a matter of fact, I do want to point out that last year I was trying to convince Macy to go to WealthCon. She had never been to any of the Grant Cardone seminars or webinars or any of that stuff. And so I'm listing off the people that are going to be on there, and I mentioned you guys, and she was like, oh, that's it. Yep, I'm going. I just want to hear those guys. She already knew all about you, had been following you guys for years. So
made lots of money because of you. Thank you.
So I'm going to let Macy talk about that experience.
Well, sure.
You know what's so funny? I'm so jealous of people getting into the trading business now, and I call it a business because back, you know, when you and I were probably learning in the 1900s.
no, that would be me, not you.
Well, there weren't these bundled packages that says, here's a business in a box, right? I mean, you're learning over months and months and months, and it's still the case. But, you know, I went on Market Rebellion website, and I thought, this is a genius. This is a genius. This is a business in a box for a fraction of the money to start a business. And your return on investment is pretty quick, and you can do it from your house. And so people always ask me, you know, the vehicle to get in to really make some serious money. And I always tell them trading. And so I wanted to ask, where did you guys come up with Market Rebellion? It just was such a need for it in the market, I'm assuming. But I talk us a little bit about, if somebody's going to start and they're like, hey, I want to get paid like a business, so I'm going to treat this like a business. Where do they start?
Sure. Well, and those are, thank you very much, Macy, for running through that. Where do you start? Really, we have a lot of great free education, and I'd tell anybody, even though we'd love to sell you stuff, folks, avail yourself of the free stuff on our site first, because then you can kind of get a little bit of the hang of things and decide, boy, that makes a lot of sense. I'd like to turn this into, just like Macy said, a business in a box, where you, once you learn how to do this, it's repeatable over and over and over again. And maybe that's why we got along with Grant, because he had never been a guy that was really into anything but real estate and motivational speaking, teaching, but he was really into real estate and did not like the markets. And yet once we showed him that the stock market and trading stock and options are really very similar to real estate, you've got to do your homework. But then once you learn the process, you can buy, hold it for a while, sell it at a higher price most of the time. Sometimes if it's not working, sell it back out where you bought it, hopefully, and stay disciplined. And it really is something that's repeatable over and over and over again. I mean, back in the day when I was on the floor, Mace, I used to trade probably 1,000 to 1,500 times a day, every day. So not 60 times an hour, which would be once a minute, but probably multiple times a minute. And why? Because you were in a position where somebody wanted to buy something and I'd sell it to them. They said, how are the 55 calls? And I'd say, quarter half. And they'd say, buy them. And I'd say, sold. And then I'd try to buy it back as quickly as I could at a profit. I sold it at a half. I'll try to buy it back for a quarter or at three eighths. If I do buy it back at three eighths, I'm making an eighth difference between three eighths and a half. I'm making an eighth, which is $12.50 on every single contract. So if I traded 100 contracts, I'm making $1,200 on that one trade. And I move on to the next one. And then hopefully another one and another one and another one. And it really kind of, I guess that's why my voice is still a little hoarse, because even all these years later, you know, yelling at the top of your lungs for 6.5 hours a day for 25 years will kind of take it out of your voice a little bit. So I think my voice was probably different. You know, before I got into all that, but it's, like I say, very, very repeatable. Once you understand what's going on, and again, Macy wouldn't be here if she didn't understand. Once you understand, then it really is repeatable. When you have a bad day or a bad week or even a bad month, like obviously the month of April was pretty miserable for most of us, but what do? I shorten up my swing credit when I'm not hitting the ball as well as I need to, because I want to make money every single day. So if I'm trading right now probably 20 or 30 times a day, that means I need to make money probably 20 times and only lose money 10 times in a day. So I need to shorten up my swing just like a batter does when they're not hitting as well as they normally hit. And if you're really hitting the ball hard, like knock on wood right now, if we're really hitting the ball hard because the market has turned around and burned to the upside, that's when you slide your hands down the bat and you take a bigger swing because you can. And I think just simple little ideas like that that you can impress upon people about, okay, if it's not working, don't do it so big. Don't trade so big. Shorten up your swing. As soon as it starts to work again, then let that bat rip. You know, put more of it out there. So right now, I'm probably back to trading 200 contracts at a time. Back in April, I had probably shortened it up to 20 contracts because every day we were getting hit with something else. If it wasn't the tariff tantrum, it would be, you know, something else that they said, China's going to do this, or the UK is going to do that, and the war in Ukraine and Russia, it's picking up again, and all this. Every single one of those things was hammering on the market. And so, like we all, my brother and I always say, it's like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. It feels so good when you stop. So, if it's not working, then shorten up your swing, which for most of us means cut down your size. If you're normally a 50 lot trader or 500 share trader, whatever it is, make it smaller. And as soon as it starts working again, then, you know, ratchet back up to those higher numbers and you'll find that it works out much better for you and you don't lose as much hair in the meantime.
Well, I don't know if you have any hair, John, but because you're wearing a hat.
I don't.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Wendy, you have any hair? You're wearing a hat. I don't know. But Megan and I have a full
hair. No hair there.
I have a question for you. For those who know, I live in Las Vegas, and I do play a lot of poker when I can because it's more strategic than just gambling. Now, do you think playing stocks, as they call it, trading option, how can you justify? Is it gambling or is it strategic? I mean, you have a lot of what's called, you know, pattern recognition because you've done it so many times and you've gone through 2000. You've gone through the crash of 2008 and, of course, COVID. So you have a lot of experience and I've been through it, so I can weather the storm. But for someone who has, especially a lot of these young traders who's been the market has been so great in the last 17, 18 years. They don't, and then they're like, oh, everything's easy. How do you, is it gambling?
No.
Okay, why?
But it's as fun as gambling. And here's what I'll say, credit. If Las Vegas let people do what you can do when you're trading, Las Vegas wouldn't exist. When you're trading, you can move the odds so far into your favor. You know that, like you said, I like playing poker because it's more strategic. And you're right. There are other games that are kind of strategic, but poker's probably the best example. On the other hand, when you're seeing people that are, putting good money after bad, in other words, maybe they can bluff. But on Wall Street, you really can't bluff. But when you're sitting there investing your money on Wall Street, I can wait until all the odds are in my favor. Doesn't still mean I'm going to win every time, but I'm following really smart traders. I don't know who they are. I just know by their size, the amount of contracts or the amount of shares that they're trading, that it's somebody big. I want to follow those people because I think they're right a lot more than they're wrong. Vegas doesn't let you do that. I can't just stand behind you, for instance, credit, and say, wow, credit's really on a streak here. I want to bet with credit. They don't let you do that. They also shuffle up the deck or they bring in a new dealer. If you're playing blackjack and all of a sudden the table's winning too much, they'll pull out that dealer like that.
Well, no, and they will also kick you out of the casino. They'll ban you. They'll call you an advantage player. And in stocks, there's no such thing. You can be an advantage player. And let's highlight how you can become an advantage trader in your world. Because you mentioned you see the money flowing in. You see signals. Mm-hmm. What kind of signals do people look at? And what does your program offer that's going to give that advantage, that little slight advantage?
Sure. And sometimes it can be more than slight. So, for instance, QBTS, this one, it was a stock that people were betting on when it was $7. And then it went 8 and then 9 and then 10 and then 11, then 12, then 15, just in the last few weeks. And each time we saw larger and larger bets being placed. So, John, what's a bet in air quotes? A bet is in trading when they start buying a lot of calls. They're betting on the upside of that stock because a call option is the right to buy something. And when they're buying a lot of calls, and these are, like I say, smart investors, these probably are not retail like most of us. They're probably institutions. People like, for instance, the biggest trader on earth is Warren Buffett. We have followed him a number of times, not knowing that it was him, because trading's anonymous. But by the size, you can sort of imply strongly that this is an institution that is buying these options. How do I know? Because they bought 10,000 options. That's a million shares of stock. Chances are that's not retail. I still don't know if it's Warren Buffett. I don't know if it's Ray Dalio. I don't know if it's Michael Dell or Mark Cuban. I don't know if it's Macy. But what I do know is whoever it was really big and they were confident in their bet. And those are the people that I want to follow. So what my brother and I did was we developed software that allows us to follow those biggest high volume trades. So you called them advantaged players. I would say that, just like you said, we're advantaged investors. We're basically moving those odds even further. So forget about 50-50 right down the middle. Instead, we're able to move it all the way to about 78% chance that we're going to win. And that's why we feel confident when we trade, because I say, hey, 78% of the time I'm going to win. Is that every time? No. And still, those 22% of the time, it's going to suck when I lose. I don't like losing. So I'm going to cut those losses. If I paid, for instance, credit, if I paid a dollar for an option and it falls to 50 cents, I'm out. Doesn't matter if it might bounce back. That's not my game. My game is cut the losses, move on to the next trade. And if it's a winner and that same option goes from a dollar to $2, I'm going to take half of that money off the table. So if I traded 200 contracts and it goes from $1 to $2, each one of those dollars, by the way, is $100 because every option is for 100 shares. So I would have just turned that $10,000 investment, $100 for each option, I would have just turned that into $20,000. I take half of that off the table, let the rest run. Hopefully I can chase it for a while and, you know, take the money off the table as it's running. And that's really what it's all about, is managing your risk, moving the odds into your favor, and knowing that you don't have a gun to your head to make a trade. Just like you in Vegas, there's no gun to your head to have to make that bet. If you think that the odds are in your favor, or if the other player in Vegas has a tell that you think they're bluffing or whatever, great, then go for them. On Wall Street, like I say, we don't have that bluffing part of it. Instead, what we have is that the stock's starting to go up, and it goes up faster and faster and faster. And pretty soon, here's another one just from the last 2 weeks, Home Depot. 2 weeks ago, Home Depot was $360 a share. Today, it was $390. Somebody bought a lot of options when it was $360, and then it ran $30 over the next 2 weeks. That's a nice trade. And if you traded the stock, 1,000 shares of a $360 stock is $360,000. That's a lot for even credit to put down on the table. So what we do trading the options, I was able to put down as little as $28,000 and yet experience the same sort of run that the person that bought the stock experienced. But I put a lot less money on the table, and so I can diversify. I can have a lot of different bets out there. They're not all in Home Depot. They're in, like I said, QBTS. They're in AS, which is a sporting goods company out of the Netherlands. They're in ONON, the running shoe company out of Switzerland that Roger Federer backed. I mean, they're in a bunch of different spots. Instead of saying, oh, I've got hundreds of thousands all on this one stock, and then it's, like I say, the odds don't favor me as much as when I have a diverse portfolio.
Wow.
I love the fact that you said it's all management. It's all management. It's like in Vegas when you have the chip, it's chips management, being able to really be in tune with that. And also, when you're into a trade for stock, especially for options, and that day it's not going your way at all for the next day or two, and at that point you're like, you know what, I'm going to take the loss now, because even if it recovers later on, the velocity of it having to recover, it takes so much more work to get the value back. I love that you pointed that out. Go ahead, Macy.
Oh, thank you.
No, I was just, you know, one of the things that you said with real estate, you know, I feel like options trading is the perfect business. Obviously, there's not a lot of overhead, right? And you can do it from anywhere. Your return on investment is great, and anybody can do it with little. I had a budget, right? I want to start a business. I had a budget, and 90% of my budget went into education. And I actually opened my Trade Monster account. Which is my first platform, by the way, which is much better than E-Trade now, but just funny. You guys,
this is true. I can verify it. She was telling me all about it back in the day.
Yeah. And I opened my Trade Monster account with $2,000. That's how much I had to start with because I spent so much in the, and I hate to call it education because people think it's like a college education, right? Where you get out of college and then you, no, this is completely different. I call it training. But it's a perfect business also because you're talking about when the markets go down. But what I noticed in your masterclass and in your options theory, I think it is, you actually talk about volatility. And I actually make more money when the market goes down because I sell the market its own volatility back. And so that's something you cover in your, is it your options theory or do you cover that in your masterclass? Because I really want to teach people that. Because you're recession-proofing your income, right? There's not too many businesses that you can recession-proof, and you're not all going to have winners, but just like you talked about, you have a diverse portfolio. And one thing that's always in my basket is either the VIX or I'm playing the volatility. So can you talk about kind of the difference between your masterclass and your options theory, and then which would be the best? I think options theory is a little bit more advanced. So should somebody start in the masterclass?
We have done it both ways, to tell the truth, Macy. We have done these master classes. We're going to do another boot camp, by the way, in September. And the boot camp is going to actually be at Cardone's headquarters because I think all three of these ladies know, folks, that Grant Cardone is our partner now in Market Rebellion and in she's got the heart. Yep. So he's our partner in there, and we've got Rebel Trade, and that's our new platform, Macy, that's, we think, even better than Trade Monster, and we're just rolling it out in the next week or so. We've been using it for a while already. It's battle-tested. A lot of big institutions are using it, and now we're going to roll it out.
Is it real-time?
Yep, real-time. Yeah. It's got charts that, you know, I mean, depending which charting packages you like to use or whatever, it's set up to handle all of that. We've even got a lot of AI built into the platform now for people that want to use that.
That was one of my questions about AI, okay. So we'll hit that in a minute.
Okay, but let me answer your question about masterclass versus theory first. So at the upcoming September boot camp, we're going to do both. We're putting them both together because a lot of people don't understand volatility the way Macy does, folks. Volatility is, in some people's mind, fear, and they call it the CBOE fear index. And other people, we call it the uncertainty. What's the unknown out there? The more unknown something is, the more people get nervous. If you want to say fearful, okay. But the unknown in April was, okay, it's Tariff Liberation Day, guys. What does that mean? Nobody knows. I mean, the president came up with this, and he says, okay, and now I'm going to put 100% tariff on this guy and 80% tariff on this. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm actually one of those people who is happy that the president wanted to make things fair trade. I don't think, I mean, since we are 350 million people in America, and knock on wood, we have a lot of successful people in America, a lot of millionaires in America, and people that have moved up from basically just outside the poverty level into upper middle class and even very wealthy. We're the biggest buyers on earth. America buys more than anywhere on earth. So that would imply we're going to have a trade deficit. I understand that. And as much as people don't think he understands it, the president understands that. He just wants trade to be fair. It's not fair when we can't sell our cars to China without 100% tariff, and yet they want to sell all their stuff here. Same thing in Canada. They have a 250% tax or tariff on milk products and various ag products. Why? Because they're protecting their ag economy. But is that fair that they have that on us and we don't have it on them? So the president was trying to bring things into balance, not the trade balance, but into balance as far as fair, so that if Wendy makes bourbon, she can sell that bourbon over in Europe. But right now, that bourbon has, I believe, a 100% tariff on it. So yeah. She's not going to sell very much of it.
It's this kind of knowledge that people need to get. And I think one of the things that really struck me about what you guys did with this and packaged it the way you packaged it is you talk about the things outside of the market that affect the market. And you almost feel like you're cheating because you have an expert like you that's telling us, you know, here's what's coming and this is how it's going to affect. And then you've got the Q&A every week, right, where you can – somebody like me can come on and ask you about, hey, where is this going to go with the tariffs? Which, by the way, everybody agreed with it when, you know, Clinton, Obama, and Bush all said they were going to do the same thing. So it's,
yeah.
I mean, I agreed with it when Obama said he was going to do with it, and I agreed when Clinton said he was going to do it. It's just this president actually is doing it, which is great. But
But that's that volatility. Because, again, would that tariff have been as scary, if you want to say scary, or as much of a catalyst for uncertainty if everybody else had done what they said they were going to do? No. But instead, people are like, well, is he really going to go through with this? Is he going to, you know, back down or whatever? So for 30 days, roughly, it was high volatility. And again, Macy was feasting.
It was raining. And that's what people say, I don't want to get in the market right now. And I'm like, no, this is the time. This is the time. Because you have residual income trades that you can do every month, mm-hmm. every week, you know, like the Iron Condor. And that's more lucrative when there's high volatility, when there's high uncertainty. You know, there's a little bit more risk. But you really can hedge and roll out and do all the things you talk about, I think, in a few of your managing classes. But this is the time, John, don't you think? If somebody really wants to start a business, this is in trading, this would be the perfect time?
Yeah, well,
Because
of the uncertainty, Macy's absolutely right about that, folks. Also, because options have never been bigger than they are right now. When I started, we traded 400,000 options a day. That was back in 1981. Today, we're averaging 60 million a day. 60 million a day means that's a full year's worth of trading when I started in one day. So in other words, your access, folks, to get in and out of the markets, the liquidity that is offered is unmatched. It's never been as good as it is right now. And then couple in there what Macy was saying about volatility and the uncertainty and people being afraid. Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett are heroes of mine. Charlie Munger always said, if you can't take the drawdowns, you don't deserve the outperformance. And Buffett would always say, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets, sell when there's greed. We're back to being up on the year, but we're not like up 20% or something. We just came back from being down 11 or 14%, depending on the index that we're talking about. It was about a 20% swing from the first 60 days, roughly 45 days of the year, to then a very sharp sell-off on that tariff liberation day, to now we've recaptured that and then some, depending on the stock we're talking about. And I think, just like Macy said, that is manna from heaven. That is a gift from the trading gods, a gift from the investing gods as well. You don't have to trade as actively as the two of us, but if you pick your spots, again, I can show you guys trades that back on March 9th, I bought a whole bunch of Tesla. Tesla was 220 a share, 220 a share. Today it was 350. It's up $130. It's not, and thank you, credit, but it's not that I'm that smart. It's that I saw that fear in the market. I saw everybody setting Teslas on fire in democratic cities and things like that. And I said, okay, what more can they do now to this company? And everybody had thrown out the baby with the bathwater. You know, I can throw out all these Wall Street expressions, guys, but they do it all the time. When people get scared, they just hit the exits, and they should be dollar cost averaging at a minimum, putting a little money away every month. And instead, they tell themselves they're going to do that. And instead, when we have the big drawdown like April, then they back off and they say, I'm not buying, I'm not touching. And what happens? They miss the biggest buying opportunity of 2025.
Wow. Well, John, let me ask you this. I know there are a lot of people in the audience, as well as ones listening to our podcast, that hear all of these exciting numbers and the fun that all you guys are doing over there. I mean, it sounds I'm dying to get in, but I have limited time. So I have a couple of companies. I have children. I have a husband. And it sounds like, I have pictures of people, you know, at their computers, like all day long working on this, on these trades. So realistically, if somebody wanted to get in, and obviously I've been listening to some of your free videos already.
Thank you.
What kind of time commitments are you looking at just when people are trying to get into this, to learn it and to do their trades at home?
I'd say you'd understand it pretty well in either a month or 2 months, depending on how active you are. And if you're somebody who's already traded a lot, like Macy, not that you're a beginner at all, Macy, I know you're not because of the time frame that you've been in it. But if Macy had only traded stock, guys, if she'd only traded stock, never really traded an option, probably a month before she'd get really comfortable with all the concepts. And then if she'd not really traded or invested anything before, probably more like 2 months, because we have lots of online tutorials and all that we can give people to help them get up to speed. But then how much time does it take a day? If you want to make it a full-time job, if you gave up all your other businesses, Wendy, which I wouldn't do if I was you, because I know they're big, successful businesses, and Rhett, with his businesses, I would say I always judge it by how much money and how much time does somebody have. If they told me, look, John, I've got $1 million. Can I make 100% a year? I'd say absolutely you can. You've got to work at it, but you can make. And is that a full-time job? It's probably at least half-time job. And you might say, well, my God, if I can make $1 million half time, well, why wouldn't I do that? And I'd say right back to you, you should. But you need to have that dedication and say, okay, for instance, what I do, guys, is I get up early in the morning. I'm not bragging, but I get up at, 4:30 or 5:30, depending on the day. And I look at the markets overseas, and then I put on a couple trades in the pre-market. I go and I work out, and while I'm working out, I'm sitting there on my cell phone. Whenever I'm doing cardio, I'm on my cell phone looking at what the other markets are doing. And by the time I get back to my trading desk, it's like 8:00 in the morning, an hour and a half before full trading really begins. And I trade from then until about 1:30 in the afternoon. Then I'm done. I'm done for the day. I rarely put on another trade the rest of the day. It's not that I found it was not profitable or unlucky or whatever. I just don't want to burn out. I want to be fresh looking at that stuff. And that's another reason that I love this job, because everything matters. You know, if we have a problem in Long Beach with shipping, it matters. Who's it going to affect? Retailers. It's going to affect shipping companies. It's going to affect consumer confidence, if they can't get stuff they want and all that kind of stuff. So every bit of news in one way or another, and I mean real news, not celebrity news, but real news, that moves the markets. And that's something that I pay attention to. And I might change my thesis based on where I think the market or that sector is going based on that. So I find it to be very stimulating for my brain. And I know as we get older, you want to constantly stimulate your brain just like your body so that you get a workout. And credit obviously does that at the poker table, because whether it's poker or blackjack, she's sitting there and she's calculating the odds and she's wondering, okay, well, it's a five-deck shoe that they're dealing from. And we've just seen, you know, whatever, 14 face cards of the last number of cards that have come out of the deck. In all likelihood, we're not seeing another face card for as often coming up, and I'm moving the odds into my favor by knowing that. Well, and what are you holding up there, credit?
That's your cheat sheet. What is that? You're muted.
Sorry, this is my kind of card, credit cards. These are credit cards. But I want to ask you a question. I mean, a lot of my clients and my followers are into credit. That's why I help them get access to credit. And some of them do a lot of trading with those credit lines, because it's 0% for a year and a half. And if they can manage it correctly, a lot of them win. What are your thoughts about using borrowed money to do options trading? Because I've done it. I've made money. But it's not for everyone. I mean, Macy will probably do it. Wendy will probably do it. But we're not like we're risk takers. We're rainmakers. My question to you is, what is your thought on borrowed money to trade?
Love this question.
I've never done it. For some people, I think it would put more pressure on them. And you three can obviously handle the pressure. I would think a lot of other people can't. Do I think it's a great idea to make money off of zero interest rate loans? I do. But I don't know that it is for everybody. Again, you're more sophisticated to be able to handle that. I think a lot of people that we end up doing business with, or, you know, educating, if you want to call it that, or Macy called it training, the people that we train, I think most of them would not be as comfortable as you are, credit, with trading on that credit. I think that credit has a great place in your arsenal, but again, it's more at the top of the pyramid as far as people that are sophisticated to be able to handle that. Because a lot of the people with options, one of the problems they face is they get too much leverage. Instead of buying, for instance, 1,000 shares of a stock, 1,000 shares is 10 option contracts. So all of a sudden people say, well, I can't really afford to buy 1,000 shares of NVIDIA today, because that would be $140,000 at 140 a share times 1,000 shares. But I feel like it's very reasonable for me to buy 30 contracts, even though that represents $390,000 worth of, that's how much leverage they have on that trade, because 3,000 shares instead of 1,000 shares of $130 stock. So some people, it really screws them up to get too much leverage. If you can take off the blinders and realize how much there is out there for you to do, I think it's just fine, but it's probably not for everybody. Credit.
So interesting, John. That is so interesting. I was just having this conversation because I see so many people, and I value your opinion, but I'll tell you, I don't know if I agree with that, because I see so many people borrowing money from the bank to start a gym, to start a hair salon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're borrowing $300,000-$400,000 in a bricks and mortar, and their return on an investment may be in 6 years from now if they make a success at it, and they're married to it at that point. They are married to that gym. They're married to that restaurant. With trading, you can borrow that money, and, of course, if you take the time to learn your craft, you go to barber school, you get your, you know, whatever it is, right? You become a chef. You have to spend time learning your craft. But with trading, once you spend the time to learn your craft, I would much rather borrow money to start a business in trading than a bricks and mortar barbershop or gym or restaurant or a real estate investment that, you know, I might get 5% on if I'm lucky in 2 years. To me, this is the business. If you were going to borrow money to start a business, it would be this one.
Well, and I will give this caveat to it. What you described, though, is somebody who's really expert at understanding the risks, not the risks of the borrow on the 0%, but the risks of the options. What I think, Macy, is that a lot of people over-leverage all the time. I think the person that borrows $400,000 for that gym probably over-leveraged as well, especially with the idea that, oh, if I do this right, I'm going to make $7,000 per $100,000 because I'm making 7%. So on a $400,000 borrow, I'm going to end up making 28 grand. You can make 28 grand working at freaking McDonald's, and you don't have to take on $400,000 in debt. So I agree with you. You have to, it's just like an education. My daughters, both of them went to college. One went to Tulane University. She graduated. She's working in AI. The other one is at the University of Colorado Boulder. A lot of kids don't really think about the fact that for them to go to school, unlike my kids, luckily, my kids got to go because dad had enough money to send them there. Dad and mom had enough money to send them there. If you had to sign on the dotted line for $70,000, $80,000 a year in loans, then you'd have to start looking at it and saying, well, how am I going to pay back $200,000 in student loans? What's my job? Well, if the job that you'd really like to do is something that's going to make $200,000 over the next decade in money beyond the money that you need to live on, I'd say that's a really bad trade. Again, just like your example with the gym. You've got to understand what the investment potential is and how much can you make. So we would all agree that you could make an awful lot of money trading. And as long as you're disciplined on the losses as well as the wins, you'll do great in trading. All of you, everybody watching right now, listening, you'd all do great. You could be black. You could be a teenager. You could be 80 years old. You could be, you know, a foreigner.
Mom, which is my favorite to tell.
Stay at home mom. Mm-hmm.
Yep, a stay-at-home mom. You might have a lot of time right now, especially if the kids are at school half the day or even longer than half the day. Why not? I mean, trading is one of the greatest vocations there is, and it's extremely portable. You can take it across borders. You could be trading right now, ladies, from... if you chose to, you could trade from Hawaii, just got to get up really early. Or you could trade from Europe, and you don't have to get up really early because, you know, when it's noon over there, it's just starting to be 6 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So, I mean, where do you want to live? What lifestyle do you want? How much money do you want to make? Again, all of these questions, you can do it with trading.
I want to stop you with that. Trading in Hawaii, I remember back in 2008, one of my dear friends who took out all these credit lines, and I told her to be more careful. We were about to go to Hawaii, and she had a position open. I think it was Apple Call. And she said, yeah, they're going to blow it out of the water. I remember this day. I mean, my screen cover is Hawaii right now. It's funny that's on there. But I told her, why don't you just... you know, close out your positions, like you said, close it out before you go. She says, no, I know the number is going to be good. We're going to be on a freaking island. And back in 2008, cell service wasn't that perfect yet. You know, it's still kind of patchy. Where were the first day, the number was not good. It literally, she lost 40,000 that first day. And she goes, no, like it's going to recover. Next day, it went down further. And it went, and we had the worst time. Because it's 3 hours behind West Coast. So it's actually 6 hours behind New York. So she didn't listen. So Hawaii might not be a good idea. So I'm just saying.
Well, that's if you, I'm saying, like, for instance, if you want to get up early, like you say, it's, 4:30 in the morning you start trading in Hawaii, 4:30. You start trading, but you're done at 11. So you have all day, the rest of your day to enjoy it. I'm just saying there are some people who are morning people and other people who aren't. And if you're not, you should be further on the West Coast. I'm sorry, further on the East Coast, like me. I live in Puerto Rico. So for half the year, I'm even an hour ahead of New York. So when you guys are getting up, if you're on, for instance, the West Coast, you start trading at 6:30 in the morning. I start trading at 10:30 in the morning, much more civilized.
Right. Well, I do want to give the opportunity for the audience, John, to ask some questions. I know we have a lot of people that came in today. So
Can I ask a question, honey?
Yes, of course. This is Rhett asking you,
hey, John.
Hello, Rhett.
You made a good point, and credit made a good point. Like in the poker world, people would have advantages of, let's say, and they would take percentages of certain players. I kind of look at what you guys do as taking advantage of a player that's better at this than other players, because option trading isn't that easy, being familiar with it years ago. But the way you guys have done it, you're sophisticated and you're getting some advanced knowledge. I think that's more of the money management side and teaching people the right way. That's what I was explaining to Wendy, how you guys really worked. And I think if people followed your system, they're obviously going to have probably a 70-some percent chance to beat the house. That's a really good advantage. But if they don't follow the system, like you said, if they're undisciplined, it doesn't make any difference. You guys are teaching people how to do it properly. And that's what people need to go to your classes about, because it was amazing.
Oh, thank you, sir. Appreciate that very much, Rhett. It was great to have you and Wendy in the audience in Vegas. And that one we're going to do in Cardone's studio in Aventura in September is going to be great as well. But thank you very much, sir.
We are looking forward to that for sure. I see another hand up here. Is that Ravi? Is that how you pronounce it? That's your hand up there? You can turn your mic on. We're having some difficulty. Anyone else have any questions for John Najarian? Here's your opportunity right now.
I have one. McGinnis.
They're saying the stage is
sorry.
Muted. Let me.
There's McGinnis.
Was
go
anyone?
Ahead,
oh, did I interrupt anyone?
I think you're okay.
Go ahead. I'll go after. This is Ravi.
Okay.
Sorry,
thank
the stage
you.
Was muted.
Thank
I'll
you,
go.
Ravi. This was incredible. I'm taking notes and I'm looking at the book. It's Not an Option by John and Pete, of course. I have a signed copy.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Of course.
She was with us in Vegas.
I was in Vegas.
Oh.
And either you or your brother said that my name resembles a little bit your mother's name. So I don't know if it was you or your brother, Pete, who said that. But I automatically, of course, converted into a cousin of yours as a result, because I'm Albanian, you're Armenian, and I'm like, oh, same thing.
Yeah.
so always awesome to see you, John, and thank you.
Thank you.
One question, going back when you were a little boy,
mm-hmm.
did you have a dream that even with all of these amazing things you're accomplishing, you still have not accomplished? Is there one thing that you still want to do? Like, what is one dream as a child that you're like, you know what, I still got to get at it? Because life happens, and then, of course, option, it's not an option, and all those beautiful things you're writing in the book, which I'm loving. I'm mm-hmm. curious to know the young John, maybe an eight-year-old John.
An eight-year-old John would have really loved to work with my brothers. And I do work with one of my brothers. I used to draw pictures of airplanes and things like that and put the name of the company that we were going to start on the tail of the airplane and talk about how we were going to do that together. And I have done that with one of my brothers, Pete, the one that you mentioned, probably the one that said that your name's similar to my mother's, our mother's, Mignette. The other two brothers, love them to death. They ended up going into franchising. And so they did ice cream franchises, Popeyes franchises, coffee franchises, and they've done very well at that. So I don't know that it's at this point so much of a dream to do business together with them as it was when I was a kid, but I'm certainly really happy and proud I was able to do it with my brother Pete.
Yeah, it's fun that you guys are doing so much together and traveling and doing your TV shows. And,
yep.
And it's a lot of fun.
It is.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Ravi, go ahead.
I'm here. Hi, guys. Thank you. Hey, John. Big fan.
Hey, Ravi.
I always see you on CNBC and follow you on Twitter. Like every
Thank
day,
you, sir.
So. I do have a question for you, John. I've been trading for 5 years. I'm a day trader. So I got in with those GM and AMC days. So,
mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I kind of took this full time and I've been doing this for 3 years. So my question is, since April 2nd, it's not about the charts anymore. It's about the tweets in this market. So how do you trade in this market? Like, is it still technicals or is it more of like, I mean, do you do zero DTE or weeklies, leaps? Like, what do you recommend to people?
I still look at what the smart money, Pete and I always call it smart money, what the smart money is doing. And we determine smart money by size. In other words, people that are committing lots of dollars to trades. So in probably the middle of April, it switched and they started selling puts that they had and they started positioning back into calls. They haven't started buying puts as aggressively at all since then. And I think we both know why, because when it rebounded, seems like Trump is getting more and more wins that he's going to stack up. I would have said that one of the things he did wrong, Ravi, was, and he didn't ask me.
But, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things was, I wouldn't fight the whole world. It didn't work well for Germany in World War I or World War II. And it didn't start off so well for Trump either, because you can't fight the whole world at once. I think if he starts stacking up wins, get Italy, get France, get, you know, India or some, you know, place. If you can stack up a bunch of wins, then you can go after China. If you go after the whole world all at once, it's really hard. And that's why that was so uncertain, because nobody had ever done that before in terms of trade. So I agree with you that tweets in and around what the president might do next were really telling in April. Not as much anymore, but I'm sure you remember a couple of his tweets. One of them was, it's a great time to buy stocks, everybody.
He did that twice, John. He did that twice.
Yep. He did. And both of them were right, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, although not like that instant, but he was right in both counts. And boy, if you have somebody giving you tomorrow's newspaper today, you got to read it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, I know we're getting close to the end. Thank you for that question. Great question. Tim, I see you. We have one more question for time-wise. Tim, go ahead.
Okay, thanks for that, Wendy. How you doing, John? It's
hey,
good
Tim.
To see you on Chatter. As a trader that's been trading equities as well as futures for at least a decade, I'm pretty sure you're aware of the new products that, you know, CME has rolled out over the past few years as it relates to the crypto market. So specifically around options on crypto, one, would you recommend a beginner to actually go into that market? And two, if that recommendation is true, what are some of the disadvantages a new trader must avoid when it comes to trading options on crypto specifically?
Well, crypto is in the neighborhood of twice as volatile as the S&P. So if you're somebody who occasionally gets spooked by the sort of volatility Macy was talking about at the top of the broadcast, crypto is twice as volatile as that, usually. There are times when it calms down and it almost flatlines, but I don't know that we're in those times right now, Tim. So after getting right back up to 107 for Bitcoin and then coming off of it, I'm still a bull on Bitcoin, but I would be a much more comfortable seller of puts than I would be a buyer of calls, because I just don't know in the very short term, even if Congress passes the Genius Act, I think that's what they call it. I know it sounds strange, but the Genius Act is basically something for stable coins, and it's around regulation that the government would want to put on digital assets like Bitcoin and so forth and stable coins. And I think there might be some hype that's built into that announcement when it comes out, and maybe we get another pop here, but then I would think it settles in for a little bit. So I think a lot of the calls might die on the vine, and I think I will be trading more out-of-the-money puts and selling those puts because, like I say, I think that we're likely to be sort of meandering rather than running to the upside in the short term.
Okay. Thanks for that, John.
Sure thing, Tim. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Macy. Go ahead.
It was me, actually. I just saw Corrine had had her hand up. I was hoping we had time for one more question. I know there's a lot of people excited to see you here. Do you have time, John? I know you've got to get back to your conference.
Yep.
Corrine, did you have a question?
Yes. Thanks, Wendy. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Hey, John. Thanks.
Hey, Corrine.
Question to you is, what is your biggest loss? Because we always talk about wins when we do this. I've been trading since 2017. I'm more of a swing trader than an options trader. I'm kind of a little bit of uneasy about options only because I don't have plenty of education. So it's all about education. And, you know, the market definitely becomes very predictable once you're in the game. You got to be in the game to learn the market, right? So what has been your biggest loss in terms of your journey with options trading?
Oh, when I turned 30, that very day, I lost $1 million in about 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
So that would be my big, knock on wood, that's still my biggest loss ever. But we did make it back. My firm, I had several traders with me. I didn't actually make those trades that lost us that money, but it was my money. So it felt like it was my fault. I have at times had really big winners too. And I'll how about if I end it with this, Wendy? And Karen, I asked this coach, one of those coaches for sort of like Wendy in Billions that can make you better by, you know, building you up and so forth. I don't have one of those coaches, but I have a friend who does that. And she is a coach for really big billionaires all over the world. And she basically, you know, gets their mind right and does all that. So she says, you know, I can help you too, John. And I said, maybe you could, but I don't even know what to ask you. And she said, well, just try to think of something and then ask me. And I said, okay, why does losing even a little feel worse than winning big? feels great. So in other words, winning big, that feels great. Why does losing even half of that, even a quarter of that, feel worse than the joy you feel over the win? And she said, that's really easy. And I said, do tell. And she said, well, John, it's like this. You're a wolf, and you're out there in Yellowstone, and you're running with the wolf pack. You're the pack leader, and you go out and you kill an elk, and the whole pack eats, but you eat first, and they're all nuzzling you, and they're all giving you your accolades and everything, and that's what winning feels like. She says, but then you are that same wolf, and you go off into the wrong part of Yellowstone, and all of a sudden you smell another wolf pack's scent that they've marked the area with. She said, you have to have that ingrained in your head that you never make that mistake again, because you might die if that happens again. So she said, that's why losing even a little has to hurt worse than winning big, because you have to, you know, your mind has to basically have it beat into it that you're not here to lose money. You're here to make money. And if you lose money, it's going to hurt. So you're basically, everything in your body is telling you to not lose, to instead work to win all the time. But none of us win all the time. But every time I lose, even a little, it hurts.
Excellent point. Wow, that was a great question. Well,
Let's round this up. We had over 600 people in Twitter Live watching this, and definitely you can watch this replay on Wendy's page. Definitely give John Najarian a follow on Instagram and on Twitter, and also Market Rebellion, because you can get all that information on there. Definitely thank you, Macy. Thank you, Wendy, for having me co-host this episode. We're going to have many, many other episodes every Tuesday at 7 p.m., Rainmakers Power Hour on Chatter, and of course give Wendy a follow and Macy on both Instagram and chat and on Twitter myself. And we love this. This is a great conversation.
Great, John. We can talk to you all for hours, obviously.
Awesome. We'll do it again.
Let's do it again. I do want to say a thank you to our sponsor, Ollie Bigler, Smarter Aircraft.
Thank you, Ollie.
Generation of private aviation investments.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We appreciate you, Ollie. And of course, to William and Harry, a luxury golf brand. Check them out at williamandharry.com, who incidentally just got voted most comfortable golf shoe by Golf Digest. You can see it in their magazine there. So check out both of those companies. We appreciate their sponsorship. But thank you so much, John. We appreciate it. And all to the audience for coming in to our tech team, all Perez and Nigel. And we appreciate you guys. Enjoy your time in Palm Beach, and tell the Market Rebellion guys we said hello.
I will. Thanks, Wendy.
We'll
credit.
See you at WealthCon.
Macy. Bang. See you at WealthCon.